Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. On today's program, we will talk with Robert Kowalski, the author of the new 8-week cholesterol cure. We will talk with Mr. Kowalski about natural ways to lower your blood cholesterol using plant sterols, soluble fiber, and other natural methods. But before we get into today's exciting topic, let's hear the latest research and news affecting our health and longevity today.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Well, here's a study that says that salad eaters get 40% higher veggie intake. Tossing greens offers simple, easy ways to improve your nutrition. Now, there's some good news and some bad news on the salad eating front these days. And the bad news is that a full third of Americans don't eat salads. The good news is that those among us who do eat salads can enjoy a 40% higher vegetable intake, and with it, all the nutrient benefits that leafy greens bring. Now, these are findings of a study recently published in Medscape Journal of Medicine. Researchers from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta looked at dietary data from roughly 16,783 adult Americans between the years of 2003 and 2006. Unfortunately, dark green vegetables like romaine, spinach, arugula account for a small portion of vegetable intake. The recommended daily servings for vegetables generally is 3 cups of raw vegetables, but the actual consumption was less than 1 cup. However, tossing up or ordering a salad a few times a week can dramatically increase your vegetable intake. Leveraging salad bars to improve children's nutrition could be particularly effective. One UCLA study found that fruit and vegetable intake rose 40% after the introduction of a salad bar. That translated into more nutrients, but fewer overall calories consumed by students. Well, here's an interesting study that shows there's another reason to avoid obesity in midlife. Being very overweight may increase the risk of dementia later in life, according to a study in the Annals of Neurology of 733 healthy middle-aged people. The more overweight they were, the lower their total brain volume as seen on MRIs, independent of vascular risk factors. Lower brain volume is a predictor of dementia. Abdominal fat was found to be the most risky, and previous studies have also linked obesity and especially abdominal fat to an increased risk of dementia. Well, there's a myth that's saying that fruits and veggies are too expensive, that lower produce prices prompt increased junk food purchases. According to conventional wisdom, pricey produce condemns low-income populations to obesity and its related ailments. The reasoning goes that people would buy more fruits and vegetables and less unhealthy junk food if only produce was more affordable. But in an experimental simulation of grocery shopping, lowering produce prices actually prompted shoppers to buy more junk food. Well, here's a study that says that grief may boost heart attack risk. This study showed that higher heart attack rates are seen in the days after losing a loved one. Losing a loved one may break your heart in more than one ways, according to the research. A person who is mourning the death of someone close is at risk of suffering a heart attack in the days immediately following the loss and for up to a month afterward, a new study shows. The researchers say it's the first study to look at whether a meaningful loss can trigger a heart attack in someone who is grieving. It also identifies the most vulnerable time period for an elevated heart health risk in bereaved. The research, which appears in the journal Circulation, looked at almost 2,000 people who had been hospitalized for a heart attack between 1989 and 1994. After reviewing charts and interviewing these men and women, whose average age was 61, 270 people were found to have experienced a death of an important person during the six-month period up to their heart attack. 19 people in the study said that they lost a loved one in the day before having a heart attack. 15 of these 19 had no history of heart attacks. Following the death of someone close, the researchers found that heart attack risk was 21 times higher than normal within the first day. It was nearly 6 times higher than normal within the first week and steadily declined over the first month. Why does grief increase heart attack risk? Although the death of someone close is a rare reason for a heart attack, the researchers theorize that the emotional stress of grief, including anger, anxiety, and depression, can take a toll on the heart. When the body releases more stress-related hormones, this might increase a person's risk of having a heart attack. It increases blood pressure and also the tendency for blood clotting. And after losing someone they care about, people tend to sleep and eat less, and they may smoke more and forget to take their medication. These are some of the reasons why people who are grieving are at much higher risk for heart attack than usual. Now, the researchers say that friends and family of bereaved people should provide close support to help prevent such incidences, especially near the beginning of the grieving process. We'll be back after this short break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Welcome back to Health and Longevity. Do you have questions about nutrition, health, or longevity? This is your chance to have them answered. On each program, Dr. Westerdahl will choose a key question from our listening audience and respond to it on the air. Due to the high volume of emails, Dr. Westerdahl cannot personally answer each question on our broadcast. If you would like to submit a question, please go to our website, healthandlongevityradio.com. Once there, you will see a button to submit your questions. And now, the question of the day.
And our question for today is, how does organic food make a difference for our health? Well, personally, I have to recommend, I believe in eating organically grown fruits and vegetables. I think that's the healthiest way to go, and there's a number of reasons. First of all, organic produce contains fewer pesticides. Now, pesticides are chemicals such as fungicides, herbicides, and insecticides, and these chemicals are widely used in conventional agricultural, and the residues actually remain on and in the food that we eat. So that's one of the reasons that it's better to not use these pesticides. Now, another reason, another important point, is that organic food is often fresher. Fresh food tastes better. And organic food is usually fresher when we eat it because it does not contain the preservatives that make it last longer. Now, organic produce is often, but now it's not always, so you have to really watch where you're getting it from. But organic produce generally is often produced on smaller farms near where it is sold. So fresh fruit is healthier, and I recommend going to the farmers markets and getting your organic produce that way so you can make sure that it's really farm fresh. Now, another important health benefit for organic foods is that organic production reduces health risks. Now, many of the EPA-approved pesticides were registered long before extensive research has linked these chemicals to cancer and other diseases. Now, the EPA considers 60% of all herbicides, those are the weed killers, 90% of all the fungicide, those are the mold killers, and 30% of all insecticides, those are the insect killers, as potentially cancer-causing. Organic farming keeps harmful chemicals and pesticides out of the foods that we eat and the beverages that we drink. It also prohibits the use of antibiotics in animal feed, which is routinely used in conventional farming and is known to create dangerous antibiotic-resistant pathogens. Organic farms also benefit the farm workers who have high exposure to chemicals and synthetic pesticides. Now, another benefit of organic farming is that organic farms respect our water sources. The elimination of polluting chemicals and nitrogen leaching, done in combination with soil building, protects and conserves water resources. Organic farming reduces toxic farming runoff and pollutants that contaminate our water, soil, and air, and eventually our bodies.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl discusses vital topics important to your health and longevity.
Our special guest today is Robert Kowalski. Mr. Kowalski was a medical journalist who authored the book, The New Cholesterol Cure, and other popular health and nutrition books. His main interest was in the field of heart disease and heart disease prevention. And the interview you are about to hear is an interview that I did with Mr. Kowalski on the convention floor of the American Dietetic Association. Well, Bob, it's great to see you again, and thank you for being on the program.
Good to be back with you, John.
Tell me, all those years, I know we first met at the first International Congress on Vegetarian Nutrition put on by Loma Linda University in Washington, D.C., and at that time, the director of nutrition for Quaker Oats said, oh, you got to meet Robert Kowalski and hear about the oat brand. And this man, I have to tell you, is the one that made oat brand famous nationwide. People didn't even hear of it before, and you brought in oat brand as part of your 8-week cholesterol cure. Tell us a little bit the evolvement of, from those days, your first book, and now what's the difference with your new 8-week cholesterol cure?
Okay. Well, first of all, you're absolutely right. The oat bran was the basis of the program to really save my own life, because I had had, by that time, a heart attack and 2 bypass surgeries. And I had little kids. This was 1984 that they told me I was going to need a second one.
And you were only how old?
At that time, I was 41. Facing my second bypass. I had to take matters into my own hands. And actually, these were the days before statin drugs, so there was very little to work with. So being trained as a medical journalist, I gave myself the assignment, find out what could I do to get my own cholesterol level down. And oat bran was being researched, not in terms of cholesterol, but in terms of diabetes. And they found, as a sort of a serendipitous finding, that that by controlling blood sugar levels, it also had an effect on cholesterol levels. It dropped it significantly. They were working with oatmeal at the time, and then they identified the fiber in oatmeal, which is the beta-glucan, which is the richest in the oat bran. And so I thought, aha, that's terrific. Now, reading further, I found out about a vitamin called niacin that they had worked with, used in research with a drug that worked sort of like the oat bran did. They combined those two for dramatic results. And I thought, what if I were to combine oat bran with niacin? Bingo, in 8 weeks, my level went from 284 to 169. It was subsequently shown at UCLA to work for others as well. I wrote the book at that time. That was, again, 1987 that the book came out, April of 87. Since that time, I've published a newsletter on a quarterly basis, and just recently convinced my publisher that that first book was obsolete. I literally had to lobby them to get them to change, because they said, Bob, the book is still selling. Why would we want a new book? And I said, because it's obsolete. There's so much new information.
That's one of the things that as we go along, I mean, sometimes it's just a year later or less. Sometimes before when the book comes out, it's already obsolete. But now with all the information coming out and the research you've been, and I know you keep up on the latest research in heart disease, so you added a lot more material.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, at the very beginning with the first book, I kept going back to the editor saying, can you add this one thing? Can you add this one thing? All the way to the publication date, realizing then that by the time the book got printed, it was still going to be obsolete. So at that time, I started publishing this newsletter to keep my readers up to date. And that, in turn, has kept me involved in the business all this time, going to all of the heart meetings and so forth. So now this new book came out, actually, the hardcover came out in 2002. And the book that you have in hand, the paperback edition, came out in 2004. And it was this one is way revised from the book in 2002. And we have so many things now that we're aware of that we didn't know about. Things like homocysteine as a risk factor for heart disease. So easy to take care of. You simply take a regular, ordinary, multiple vitamin in the morning, along with a B-complex supplement. Between the two of those, they'll give you 800 micrograms of folic acid, some B6 and B12. Bingo, your homocysteine is under control. That's all you need to do, no side effects whatsoever. Inflammation, another thing that we're starting to learn about that we knew nothing about in the 80s. Today we know that we can deal with it in many, many ways, not only by lowering the LDL per se, but by taking things like fish oil capsules. And for those who are vegetarian, you can also get the omega-3 fatty acids produced really by your own body by means of consuming foods like flaxseed and walnuts, which then will be converted from those sources into the omega-3s. It's not quite as efficient as eating the fish or taking the fish oils, but especially if you're vegan and refuse to have anything to do with any animal matter, then that's the way to go for that aspect.
And also now there is a supplement, DHA, that's from algae, so there is a vegetarian source now that's available to get DHA.
Oh, actually that's new for me, and that's why I come to meetings just exactly like this, because this is where I learn also. Great, wonderful, and so you mentioned one now that's new to me, and we're standing by a booth that it's a company out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, Cargill. They've developed a way that they take plant sterols, which are concentrated in plant seeds and oils. The plant sterol is the plant equivalent of cholesterol. It's so similar that the body can't tell the difference. And so if you consume these plant sterols on a regular basis, the body takes them into the receptor sites for cholesterol and thereby blocks the whole process of cholesterol transport, and in addition binds onto the bile. So even if one is a strict vegan and consumes no cholesterol anyway, your body is still manufacturing bile for the digestive process. The body is very efficient in recycling the bile. But by taking in these plant sterols, also known as the phytosterols, it binds to the bile. The bile is then eliminated from the body. The body then has to draw cholesterol out of the bloodstream, and the liver makes more bile, thereby depleting the amount in the plasma of cholesterol in the plasma, and down goes your level by, believe this, 10%. And we've got tons of research backing this up. So what Cargill has done is to invent a way that these plant sterols, which actually are derived from soybeans, and then make this both cholesterol and the plant sterols are not soluble in water. That's why originally we saw these things in margarines. But to eat that way, you're getting more fat. And a lot of these supposedly good for you margarines are made with partially hydrogenated oils. So even if they say zero trans fat, that means that they've got just under the cutting line FDA to say that it's okay for you to say that.
So, but now they are also, Cargill's also adding it to some other products too that we see here that are actually healthier than those more fat to the diet. Tell us about some of those.
Well, that's exactly the point. Instead of just having it dissolve in oil for the margarines, Cargill invented a technology whereby these plant sterols can be dissolved in water. So now you can find it in Minute Maid orange juice, Yoplait yogurt. There's a dairy substitute called Rice Dream that I'm sure your listeners have heard about before. Probably use it frequently in their own diets. Now this is laced with these plant sterols. So what you're getting is by doing this on a regular basis, making these kinds of choices. There's a great granola bar that Nature Valley has on the market. Two wonderful cereals from, which one is it now? Health Valley cereals. One of them, incredibly, is oatmeal. Laced with the plant sterol. So you get a double whammy. You get the soluble fiber from the oats plus the plant sterol. So by making the choices on your shopping list, pick foods that have the plant sterols in it, you're going to get this additional 10% reduction, and that can mean the difference between heart health and not.
I know you're real interested in kids' health, and this is another opportunity because kids today are having problems with cholesterol, and them eating these types of products to keep their cholesterol in control. I know my daughter, I'm looking over here at Minute Maid Heartwise. One of the last times I went shopping with my 7-year-old daughter, who is a vegan and follows a really healthy diet, but she's aware, I teach her, she comes to my lectures and hears a lot about this stuff. So she says, Daddy, can we get the Minute Maid Heartwise? So we pick up that, too. So she's into it, too. So get your kids eating these healthier products.
Absolutely. You can't give a child a drug because their livers aren't developed enough. Even though I'm an advocate of the use of niacin to reduce cholesterol levels, in my own children, whom I tested at 4 and 7, and both of them had elevated levels, I could not give them niacin. Their livers weren't ready for it. But I could start them into various lifestyle changes that they've kept up, and now they're in their 20s and still following. And with the plant sterols, you can start at any age because it never enters the bloodstream. It's non-systemic, as they call it. So therefore, it never has any potential for any side effects whatsoever. So for a child to simply cut back on some of the trans fats from the processed foods, that'll give you about a 5 to 6% reduction in cholesterol. Add soluble fibers with beans and with oat products, with barley, with figs, to get another 6 to 8%. Then add the plant sterols as a part of your regular diet, choosing the right orange juice, yogurt, and so forth, and you get another 10%. So you're looking at over a 20%, 20 to 25% difference. There was a study done in Canada by Jenkins. He's the man that invented the glycemic index. He called it the portfolio diet.
In fact, we had him on the program talking about that. Go ahead.
That's wonderful because it ties beautifully into it. He showed by doing the very things that we're talking about right now, including these plant sterols and the soluble fibers, that he could get as much cholesterol reduction in just doing those things as compared to doing the statin drugs. That's terrific. And you have none of the side effects.
Now, that's great, and I know the wonderful research he did. Challenge is now how are we going to get doctors to tell their patients about this? In other words, you know what? Here's an option. You can go on this portfolio diet or you can take the drug. You know, give them, you know, because ethically, and it's even in the protocols for American Heart Association, you're supposed to do the diet and lifestyle things first. But a lot of our doctors today, they just write that prescription.
Sure. There are two reasons for that. Number one, the pharmaceutical companies are sending in the reps all the time, and it's easier to just write a prescription. But this time I'm going to let doctors off the hook. I've talked to enough of them who would love to spend 15 or 20 minutes with a patient just talking. However, their insurance won't allow them to do that. They're limited with the amount of time. So really the change that needs to happen is not with the doctors, but with the insurance companies that should recognize that it's a lot cheaper to invest a little time in preventive medicine to teach people how to avoid the bypass surgery that's going to cost $50,000. You know what? This is perhaps a little devious, but sometimes Machiavellian techniques are not entirely bad, the end justifying the means. If someone's glucose level, let's say, was a little bit elevated, just a little bit elevated. Not formal diabetes yet, not a clinical definition of diabetes, but elevated. And the doctor is now concerned. Well, at that point, we could call that pre-diabetes. At that point, you can be covered by insurance to go visit your dietitian. Absolutely. Consider that.
Now, since since we'd last talked, you've written a bunch of other books. I didn't realize you had written so many. Tell us a little bit about some of the things you've been writing about.
And as you said, I've written a book on children's health. That was very important to me, having my own. I've written a book on diabetes, which is becoming pandemic in this country. Another one on recovery from heart attack and bypass, which has been used a lot by physicians to help people make the comeback. Because as one doctor that we were just talking about there in California, I keep forgetting where I am these days, but he actually maintained that every single one of his patients read that book, because he used to tell people, I've seen you for the last time. I never want to do another bypass on you again. And if you do what's in this book, you'll never have to need my services again. So, yeah, I've been keeping busy. This is the eighth book, actually. And back in my office are the beginnings of number 9, which will be a book on lowering blood pressure with natural means.
Well, great. It's great to see you after all these years again. And keep up the great work and helping many people across the country get on healthy programs and eating healthier, and keep up the great work.
Thanks very much, John.
For more information about Mr. Kowalski's books and other books written by our guests that appear here on Health and Longevity, you can go to our website at www.healthandlongevityradio.com. You're able to get more information about the books and also purchase them on our website. Also on our website, we have rebroadcasts of our programs. You can listen to podcasts of previous shows if you happen to miss one of our broadcasts, and they are all listed there on our website. Also on our website, you can see videos of some of my lectures and presentations that I have given at various places throughout the country on the topics of nutrition, herbal medicine, and other topics related to the subjects that we talk about each week here on Health and Longevity. Once again, for a valuable resource for you, go to our website at www.healthandlongevityradio.com.
To learn more about the books written by our guests and books written or recommended by Dr. Westerdahl in this program, please visit our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. There you can learn how to obtain your copy of these valuable and informative books. Search each page for yourself and see how you can live a happier, healthier, and longer life. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
That's it for this week. Until our next broadcast, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.